This is Audible.
Donuts and Deception by Agatha Frost. Narrated by Rebecca Courtney. Chapter 1. Julia reached under her bed, her fingers closing around the baseball bat. Her granddot had given it to her 3 weeks ago, insisting that it wasn't safe for a single woman to be living alone, especially with the recent murders. Julia hadn't taken her seriously, but had put it under her bed all the same, just in case. As she picked up the bat, she was glad for the gift. With the wooden bat in hand, she tiptoed towards her bedroom door. Holding her breath, she pressed her ear up against the cold oak, wanting to be sure she hadn't imagined the rustling that had woken her. The unmistakable zip of her backpack confirmed her suspicions. She twisted the brass doorknob, wincing as the old cottage creaked around her. She didn't know what she was going to do when she came face to face with the mystery person digging in her kitchen, but she hoped the bat would scare them off before she had to find out if she had a good swing. "I've called the police!" she cried out, the shake in her voice betraying her. "I'm armed!" The rustling stopped, and then something smashed against the tiles in her kitchen. Acting fast, she reached out and slapped for the hallway light, her fingers narrowly missing the switch in the dark. She stepped on something fluffy, which let out an ear-piercing yowl. Jumping back, her bare heel caught the edge of her hallway rug, sending her tumbling backwards, the bat flying free in the air. She opened her eyes as gravity sent the bat soaring back towards her face. Rolling out of the way just in time, she crashed into the small table, displaying the dozen roses Barker had given her. The bat clattered against the floor as she darted forward, catching the vase before it succumbed to a similar fate. "Julia!" Jessie cried, running out of the kitchen, fully dressed and clutching a backpack. "What are you doing?" Jessie flicked on the light Julia had been reaching for before she stepped on Mowgli, who was now cowering by the front door, sending daggers in her direction. Squinting at the light, she looked down at the vase of flowers she was holding in her lap. "I thought you were a burglar," Julia mumbled feebly, glancing awkwardly to the bat. Jessie took the vase from Julia and placed it back where it belonged. "You keep a baseball bat under your bed? You're more gangster than I thought, Kate lady." Julia gratefully accepted Jessie's offer of a hand. Standing on both feet, she realised she had acted thoughtlessly in her sleepy state. Her gran's fear-mongering had worked. "Are you sleepwalking again?" Julia asked as she leaned over to pick up the bat. Jessie looked down at her clothes and then up at Julia, arching a dark brow. She was wearing her Doc Martens, baggy jeans ripped at the knees and a heavy hoodie. They were the clothes she'd worn when Julia had caught her stealing from her cafe 2 months ago, before she'd offered Jessie a job and the use of her guest bedroom. "I had a dream," Jessie said, tossing the full backpack over her shoulder. "I'll explain it over a cup of tea." Julia followed Jessie through to the kitchen, where all the drawers and cupboards were wide open. Julia's favourite cat-shaped mug was scattered across her kitchen floor in pieces, having fallen victim to Jessie's rummaging. Julia sat at her kitchen counter, scratching her head as she let out a yawn. The cat clock, with its swinging tail and darting eyes, told her it was only 5 in the morning. "I had a dream," Jessie repeated, staring out into the dark garden as she filled the kettle. "I was homeless again. It felt so real." "It was just a dream," Julia offered, as comfortingly as she could. "You don't ever have to worry about being homeless again. I won't let that happen." Jessie smiled over her shoulder as she set the kettle back in its stand. She plucked two individually wrapped teabags from the box in the cupboard and ripped them open with her teeth before dropping them into two mugs. While the kettle boiled, she fished the dustpan and brush from under the sink and started to clean up the shattered cat mug.
"I'll replace it," Jessie said as she swept up the pieces. "I'm sorry. I panicked. I don't want you to think I was robbing you."
Julia cast an eye over to the bag and then to her kitchen cupboards. It appeared that most of her food had made its way into the bulging backpack.
"It's just a mug,"
Julia said, shrugging and ignoring the small pang in her chest as she watched Jessie toss it into the bin. "I'll get over it." Jessie smiled again, but her young face was solemn. Julia wondered how bad the dream had been.
"I was back on the streets,"
Jessie continued, pouring the boiling water into the two mugs.
"Back at the old Fenton Industrial Park. That's where I was most of the time."
Julia had heard of Fenton Industrial Park more than once. It was a couple of miles from Perrydale, on the outskirts of Cheltenham. The Perrydale Post had covered the devastating fire that had caused all the businesses to flee the area. What it hadn't covered was that a small community of homeless people had moved in and made the area their own soon after. But she had heard that on the Perrydale grapevine.
"I know of it," Julia said with a nod as Jessie set a cup in front of her. "I can't imagine that being an easy way to live."
"It wasn't," Jessie said, sitting across from Julia, the dark circles under her eyes becoming obvious.
"It was a horrible place to live, if I'm being honest. But it was home for 6 months. It felt more like 6 years. The winter seemed to go on forever. But we had each other, you know. We were sort of a family. We watched each other's backs and protected each other.
When I used to nick cakes from your cafe, I'd take whatever I could back and share them out."
"That was very thoughtful of you," Julia said, blowing the edge of her scalding hot tea.
"You're a nice girl, Jessie."
"But I'm not, am I?"
she cried, her voice suddenly shooting up.
"Because I got this cushy new life and left them all there to get on with it."
"Is that what the bag is about?" Jessie glanced to the bag and nodded.
"I woke up in a cold sweat," she said, staring into her cup as the teabag steeped, its golden goodness swirling in small circles. "I felt so guilty. I left to find some food 2 months ago and never went back. Not even to explain."
"Were you going back there?"
"Only to give them food," Jessie said, looking ahead at the empty cupboards. "I would have replaced it all before you woke up. I made a list."
Jessie reached into her pocket and pulled out a crumpled, messily written shopping list. Julia smiled, resting her hand on top of Jessie's.
"I don't care about the food," Julia said.
"As long as you're safe, that's all I care about."
"I wouldn't trade this in for nothing."
Jessie looked around the small kitchen as though she was taking in a grand castle.
"But the others aren't so lucky, are they?"
Julia sipped her tea, the cogs in her brain churning at light speed. She had wanted to ask Jessie about her days of being homeless ever since first meeting her, but she hadn't wanted to appear nosy. Gossiping was the number one pastime in Perrydale, and Julia hadn't wanted Jessie to think she was just another village snoop.
"I've got an idea," Julia said, after taking another sip, the licorice tickling the back of her throat.
"Go back to sleep, and we'll visit Fenton Industrial Park together when the sun has risen. We don't want to arrive when everyone is still asleep, do we?"
Chewing the inside of her cheek, Jessie looked at the bag again. She seemed to want to grab it and run straight for the door, but Julia trusted her to see the sense in what she was offering.
"I guess," Jessie said, shrugging and letting out a yawn.
"You don't have to come."
"I want to." Jessie took a sip of her tea, but as usual, she didn't finish it. She slid off the stool and hovered next to Julia, looking like she wanted to say something. Instead, she wrapped her arms around Julia's chest, squeezing tightly. Closing her eyes, she rested her hands on Jessie's arms, smiling to herself. "Go on, back to bed," Julia ordered, tapping Jessie's arms. "I'll wake you in a couple of hours." Jessie let go and headed back to her bedroom. Julia waited until she heard the creaking of Jessie's metal bed frame before she stood up. As she unloaded Jessie's bag and returned the food to her kitchen cupboards, she tried to remember her mum's old recipe for donuts. Chapter 2. Looping around the roundabout for a second time, Julia glanced over to Jessie, who had trays of donuts stacked up on her knees. Fumbling with her hands on top of the plastic wrap, securing the donuts in place, she cracked her knuckles again. She'd been doing it since he had left the cottage. "You don't have to be nervous," Julia said, finally taking the turn after driving around a third time. "I'll be by your side the entire time." Jessie didn't seem to have heard her. She stared ahead, continuing to crack her knuckles, the sound sending a shiver down Julia's spine. From the moment Julia had woken Jessie soon after sunrise, she had sensed the girl's fear. It didn't surprise Julia. While she had been baking over 100 donuts for the homeless residents of Fenton Industrial Park, Julia had wondered if returning there was the best thing for Jessie. Despite Jessie's protests that she wasn't leaving Julia, something deep within her squirmed uncomfortably. "We're here," Julia said, the burnt husk of the industrial park coming into view. Jessie snapped out of her trance state and stared ahead at the blackened warehouse buildings, which looked like they could fall to the ground at any moment. Fingers tightening around the steering wheel, Julia hated the thought of this being home to anybody, let alone a teenage girl. They pulled up outside of the industrial park, and it had a huge "for sale" sign looming next to the entrance, which in turn had a "sale by auction" sticker plastered across its front, with an auction date only a couple of weeks away. Through the spiked metal fences, Julia spotted the community Jessie had spoken about, and her heart skipped a beat. "There's so many people," Julia whispered, the words escaping her mouth before she even had a chance to think about them. "The country's hidden problem," Jessie said, with wisdom beyond her 16 years. "They live in places like this because it's easier for people to pretend they don't exist." Julia wanted to tell her that wasn't true, but she bit her tongue before she let a lie slip out. She thought of her own perception of homeless people before she had met Jessie. There was nobody that she knew of in Perrydale who was homeless. Until she caught Jessie breaking into her cafe, it always felt like an issue that happened in other parts of the country. Yet here she was, staring through the gaps in the metal fence at dozens of people, less than an hour's drive from her front door. During her time living in London, there were homeless men and women on every corner asking for spare change. She would often dig a pound coin out of her purse for the most desperate looking of them. But there were so many, it was impossible to help all of them. It was a problem most city folk were overly desensitized to. They blended into the pavement, huddled in doorways under rags, while the rest of the world got on with their comfortable lives. Jessie was right. They were hidden. But Julia wondered if that was by choice or because the rest of the country had stopped noticing them. After what felt like an age of staring, Julia twisted her keys in the ignition and drove through the broken-down gates. Men and women were huddled around makeshift fires in burnt-out barrels, others hiding from the early morning sunlight under blankets. Heads turned towards Julia's vintage aqua blue Ford Anglia, but most didn't bat an eyelid. She drove into an empty corner and jammed the handbrake in place. She glanced at the back seat at the stacks of doughnuts. When she'd left her cottage, she'd been sure she'd baked enough to have leftovers to sell in the cafe on Monday morning, but that hope quickly vanished. Julia jumped out of her car and opened her boot. She dragged out her old folding wallpaper pasting table and kicked it open, fastening the small hinges into place. After throwing a pale pink and blue picnic blanket over its tarnished surface, she heaved a giant Victorian silver coffee maker out of her car and placed it carefully on the rickety table. Taking the lid off the huge vat, she inhaled the still hot, rich coffee. She had been looking for an excuse to use the contraption since picking it up at a car boot sale over a year ago. Jessie finally got out of the car and placed the doughnuts on the table, while Julia arranged the small cardboard cups, bag of sugar cubes taken from her cafe, and a box of coffee whitener.
"Coffee and doughnuts,"
Julia announced, cupping her hands around her mouth. "Free coffee and doughnuts to all who want them." All heads turned to Julia this time, and a line quickly formed in front of the table. Jessie handed out the doughnuts, while Julia poured coffee from a tap, jutting out of an ornate lion's mouth embedded in the coffee maker. People accepted their free sweet treat and hot drink, while gratefully muttering their thanks. "Jessie?" An old, worn voice called from the crowd of faces.
"I thought that was you."
A slender, elderly man hobbled forward with the assistance of a wooden walking stick that had been patched up with duct tape in more than one spot. His grey hair was long and scraggly, cheekbones high and sharp, sunken eyes and a heavy brow casting dark shadows over his face. He looked like he had the ability to look menacing without much effort. But his ear-to-ear smile was so warm. Julia wasn't sure the man possessed a mean-spirited bone in his body.
"Tommy!" Jessie
cried, matching his smile. The old man broke through the line and embraced Jessie with one arm as he steadied himself with his stick. Jessie, on the other hand, gripped the man around the waist and buried her face into his mucky clothes. It brought a smile to Julia's face as she continued to serve coffee and doughnuts. When Jessie finally let go of the man, they moved around to the front of Julia's car to talk. Julia served the rest of the people in the line as quickly as she could. When she ran out of coffee and only the crumbs of the doughnuts were left, she wiped her fingers down the front of her pale peach 1940s-style dress before joining Jessie and the old man she had called Tommy.
"I've been hearing all about you," Tommy said, holding a hand out to Julia. "If I had a hat, I would take it off to you, my dear."
Julia accepted the man's weathered hand. The strength of his grip surprised her.
"I just did what any other decent person would do," Julia said, smiling at Jessie. "I don't think every person who calls himself decent would take in a girl from the streets," Tommy assured her. "You really are a marvellous woman, and an incredible baker, too. Jessie would bring your cakes back here when she, you know, borrowed them."
"I saved you one." Julia pulled a doughnut wrapped in a paper napkin out of her dress pocket. "There's no coffee left, I'm afraid."
"And never did like the stuff much,"
Tommy said, tipping his head to Julia as he accepted and pocketed the doughnut in one of his filthy overcoat pockets.
"Not good for the heart at my age."
Julia tried to place the man's age, but she couldn't quite figure it out. His almost skeletal frame and the layer of grime covering his deeply wrinkled skin aged him, but there was a twinkle in his eyes, and a youth to his smile that made her think he was younger than he appeared. She placed him in his mid to late 60s. Something told her he wasn't much older than her own father. Tommy took them across the park, to a small doorway in one of the burnt-out warehouses. Black smudges lined the metal door, and it didn't take much of Julia's imagination to visualise the flames licking the air as they tried to escape the grand metallic structure. With his fumbling fingers, Tommy pulled two upturned plastic crates together and tossed a well-worn red blanket over them. He motioned for Jesse and Julia to take a seat, as he opted to sit cross-legged on a folded-up sleeping bag in the doorway. Julia realised she was in the man's home.
"Tommy's in charge round here," Jesse said. "What he says goes."
"I don't know about that, little one," Tommy laughed as he pulled the squashed-up doughnut from his pocket. "People here come and go and do what they please." Julia looked around the vast space. There were small clusters of people sipping her coffee and chatting amongst themselves. She noticed that the doorway where Tommy resided was perfectly in the centre of the units, looking out at the broken gate. Like a sheriff, sitting on the porch of a small-town police station in the Wild West, Julia doubted much got past this man.
"There's more people here than I imagined," Julia said, turning her attention back to Tommy as he shakily crammed the pink iced doughnut into his mouth. "I'm surprised the council isn't trying to do something to help."
"Oh, they are," Tommy mumbled through a mouthful of doughnut. "They're doing plenty to help themselves. This place has been up for sale for redevelopment since the fire. The council is doing all they can to clear us lot away from here. But there's far too many to help rehouse, and the shelters are bursting to capacity. They could arrest us all for squatting, but there aren't enough cells in the county. This doughnut is delicious, by the way. You really do have a talent for baking."
"Thank you," Julia said. "So you're just staying here for as long as you can?"
"And then some," Tommy said, laughing as he licked his dirty fingers. "Developers are sniffing around every day. It's only a matter of time before one of them takes the risk and puts in an offer. They'll level this place to the ground, stick some luxury apartments on here so those who can afford it will have somewhere nice to live."
"And those who can't are just left to move on somewhere else," Jesse jumped in.
"It's sick." "It's business," Tommy said with a heavy sigh. "It's not right, but it's how the world works. I should know. I used to be one of those developers."
"You were?" Julia asked, her brow shooting up.
"Oh, yes. Don't let my exterior fool you," Tommy said, winking out of the corner of his eye as he brushed the doughnut crumbs down the front of his threadbare jumper. "Before the recession hit, I was a landlord. I had a portfolio of a dozen properties. Then the banks collapsed and people stopped wanting to rent. Started small, but I couldn't afford the mortgages, and I went bankrupt pretty quickly. I lost my career, my house, my wife, and everything in between."
"That's so sad," Julia said, bowing her head.
"It is what it is," Tommy shrugged,
clearly already having let go of his past life.
"Life has a funny way of working out like that. It's not all bad. Folks like you are always there to provide the coffee and doughnuts to those in need. There's a nice Christian couple, Stella and Max Moon, who bring their soup truck here most nights."
Tommy suddenly stood up and jutted his stick out in front of him, his lips snarling.
"There's one of those rotten developers now."
Julia looked to where Tommy was pointing his stick. A handsome, clean-shaven, well-groomed man in a sharp suit walked into the industrial park, followed by a team of almost identical-looking men.
"That's Carl Black," Tommy spat through gritted teeth. "He's one of the worst. Doesn't even look at us like we're people.
Get out of here! You hear me?
Carl glanced in Tommy's direction, but he barely registered a reaction. Julia caught the flicker of an amused smirk, making her instantly dislike the man. He reminded her of her ex-husband. A couple of people joined in the jeering, some of them tossing their empty coffee cups in the direction of the men. The group behind Carl flinched. But Carl marched forward to the warehouse, unbothered.
"There's a sense of community here, for the most part," Tommy said proudly. "We look after our own."
"The most part?" Julia asked, glancing to Jesse.
"Well, every community has its bad eggs," Tommy said, his bulging eyes darting around the crowd. "Take alcoholic Pete, for example. He's a drunk, spends his days begging on the streets, and every penny he gets, he spends on booze."
Julia followed Tommy's eyeline. A similarly aged man was leaning half asleep against a wall, a can of beer clutched tightly in his hands.
"And then there's the deaths," Tommy added.
"Deaths?"
"Dropping like flies recently," Tommy said, his voice lowering as he leaned in. "It's what you expect in places like this. Especially in the winter, all it takes is a cold night to get those older ones on the drink and drugs. But spring is upon us and people are still dying. Not your usual type either. We had an 18-year-old die last week."
"Who?"
Jesse asked, suddenly sitting up straight. "Bailey Walker," Tommy said, dropping his head. "I know you were close to him, Jesse. I'm sorry. I was the one to find him. He was still in his sleeping bag past midday. But that wasn't like him. He was usually up and spraying his paint cans round the back. Helped him pass the day, I think. So I went over and gave him a poke with my stick and told him to get his lazy backside up. Joking, of course. But he didn't move. I pulled his sleeping bag back. He was white as a sheet, so I sent one of the younger lads running to the phone box on the corner. Ambulance pronounced him dead and carted him away."
Julia placed a hand over her mouth, which had parted while listening to the story. She looked to Jesse, who was dabbing tears from the inside of her eyes with the edge of her sleeve.
"We were in the same foster house once," Jesse said. "He got kicked out before I did. He was a good kid. He just got into trouble a lot."
"What was the cause of death?" Julia asked, turning back to Tommy, who was looking sadly at Jesse.
"Inconclusive," Tommy said, his jaw gritting tightly. "They say it was a heart attack, but they don't know what caused it."
"At his age?"
"Yeah, right. And he's not the only one. Remember the priest?"
"Father Thind?" Jesse asked, wiping away the last of her tears.
"Michael Thind," Tommy nodded. "He went 2 weeks after. Pete found him, dead in his sleeping bag, clutching his rosary beads. That man wouldn't have hurt a fly. And then there was Robert Culshaw, who went last week. Once again in the sleeping bag. He used to be a banker in the city, but the recession hit him too."
Julia's mouth opened again. She looked around at the people surrounding her, wondering how many of them had lived relatively normal lives before ending up on the streets.
"Isn't somebody doing something?" Julia urged, edging closer to Tommy.
"The police? They must be looking into it."
"Three dead homeless people aren't enough to even pique the police's interests," Tommy said with a bitter laugh. "They probably think they were druggies or drunks. Don't get me wrong, when the sun sets and we all huddle around the fires, a couple of cans of beer get passed around, but those men didn't drink any more than the rest of us. Not enough to kill them.
And there was nothing else to connect the men? Julia asked.
Aside from the fact they were men, there's nothing I know of, Tommy said, shaking his head. Michael was in his 50s and Robert was in his 40s. Those two kept to themselves. Like I said, it's not uncommon for people to die around here, but there's usually a reason. Healthy men, homeless or not, don't just die in their sleep.
You're right, Julia said, pulling her ingredients notepad out of her handbag along with a small metal pen. Can you give me those names again?
After Julia had written down the names, they walked back to the car and packed away the equipment. Jesse said goodbye to Tommy and promised to visit soon. When the man hobbled back to his doorway, they jumped into the car and slowly drove out of Fenton Industrial Park.
Why did you write down those names? Jesse asked, breaking the silence as they drove back to Perrydale.
I'm going to ask Barker if he knows anything, Julia said, looking straight ahead at the road as the cogs in her mind worked overtime.
There might be a perfectly reasonable explanation that the police haven't passed on.
It is a little odd, though, don't you think?
Jessie replied quietly as she chomped on her nails.
It is more than a little odd, Julia agreed under her breath. Very odd indeed.
Chapter 3. Peering over the top of her laptop, Julia looked through to the empty cafe. Jessie was standing behind the counter, scribbling something on a notepad, and only the customer, Julia's closest neighbour, Emily Burns, was pouring herself a second cup of tea from the pot. Julia liked the serenity of Monday mornings. She usually used these quiet times to check her stock levels and deep clean every corner of the kitchen, but this morning she was using it to surf the web. Looking back down at her computer, she picked up where she had left off reading an article about Bailey Walker's death in the Cheltenham Standard. The short article, which didn't contain a picture of the young boy, treated him as nothing more than a homeless statistic whose cause of death was inconclusive, but also non-suspicious. She flicked between the three different newspaper articles she had been reading. Robert Culshaw, the ex-banker, was referenced as having two teenage daughters, but the emphasis was strongly on his status as a homeless man. There was a picture, which was credited as being pulled from the Gloucestershire Bank website, showing a smartly dressed, clean-shaven man with neatly cut hair. Julia wondered if the poor man had still looked like that when he was found dead. The third article, about Michael Thynne's death, was a little more colourful. As well as a picture featuring him in his dog collar and black robes, the article went into detail about how Father Thynne was fired after it was discovered he had been having an affair with another local clergyman. It then went on to describe the ins and outs of his messy divorce, which somehow led to the man ending up on the streets.
"What are you doing?" Jessie asked, her sudden appearance startling Julia so much she slapped her laptop shut. "I thought you were cleaning."
"I am," Julia said, her cheeks burning.
"I was. I was just looking at something."
Jessie folded her arms and looked down her nose at the laptop, her eyes squinting tightly. Julia knew she had been rumbled.
"Wouldn't have anything to do with what Tommy said about those deaths, would it?"
Jessie asked cautiously.
"Because if you're investigating, I want to help."
"I'm not investigating."
"You investigated those other deaths?" Jessie said,
her arms tightening across her apron. "That organ lady and her son, and your father's brother-in-law, you investigated those and cracked the cases."
"It wasn't quite like that," Julia said, shaking her head. "I just...
I was just looking online to cross-check what Tommy told us.
You didn't believe him?
Of course I did, Julia said quickly. I just wanted to be sure.
Well? Jessie urged, stepping forward and placing her hands on the other side of the metal preparation table. What did you find?
Julia sighed and opened her laptop. She hadn't wanted Jessie to know she was looking into things because she didn't want to get her hopes up. Things did seem odd, but Julia knew even the strangest things could have the simplest explanations.
Jessie hurried to her side and pulled the laptop in front of her.
There's not a lot of information in the articles, Julia said as she looked over Jessie's shoulder. I was trying to find a link between them, but there isn't one that I can see, aside from them all being men and their causes of death being inconclusive.
What does that mean?
Jessie asked, turning to stare at Julia expectantly.
It means they didn't find a cause of death.
Sometimes, when people die, the cause isn't so obvious, so they do tests, and if they can't find a reason, they rule it as an inconclusive cause of death.
You mean they just can't be bothered? Jessie snapped, pushing the laptop across the counter and turning to face Julia.
They only look for certain things if they're suspicious. Sometimes people do just die and nobody knows why.
But three men? Jessie asked,
her brows dropping low over her dark eyes.
You wouldn't be saying that if three men in this village suddenly died and nobody was trying to figure out why.
Jessie pushed angrily past Julia and burst through the beads and back into the cafe. Julia hurried after her, wanting to explain, even if she didn't know what she was going to say. Julia knew Jessie was right. If three seemingly healthy men had died in Perrydale in a short space of time, nobody would have accepted three inconclusive causes of death. Julia pushed through the beads at the same time Barker walked into the cafe, clutching a wicker hamper. Without meaning to, Julia scowled at him, angry with herself for upsetting Jessie, who was furiously wiping down an already clean table. Julia looked desperately from her lodger to the detective inspector she'd been dating for the last couple of weeks, wondering who she should give her attention to. Before she could make up her mind, Jessie decided for her and walked back through to the kitchen, leaving them alone in the cafe with Emily Burns, who could clearly sense the tension.
"Is this a bad time?" Barker asked, with a strained smile as he walked towards the counter.
"It's fine," Julia lied, shaking out her curls and applying a smile. "What can I get you, Barker?"
"Actually, I was wondering if I could borrow you for half an hour." Barker looked awkwardly down to the wicker hamper, which Julia realised was a picnic basket. "I took an early lunch, and I wanted to treat you to a picnic on the village green."
Julia glanced over her shoulder to Jessie, who had resumed reading over the newspaper articles on the laptop screen.
Julia turned back to Barker, who was smiling expectantly at her. Could she really turn him down?
"It's not really a good time," Julia said awkwardly. "Lots to do today."
"Oh," Barker said, frowning a little but retaining his smile. "I thought Mondays were always quiet, unless you're expecting a sudden rush later."
"We're not," Jessie said, suddenly appearing behind Julia. "I've got things covered here."
"Are you sure?" Julia asked, trying unsuccessfully to look into Jessie's eyes.
"Yep."
Julia reluctantly left her young lodger in charge of the cafe and followed Barker to the village green, which sat perfectly in the middle of Perrydale. Barker laid down a red and white picnic blanket, and Julia quickly sat in a position so that she could still see through her cafe window. Emily Burns appeared to be trying to coax some information out of Jessie, but Jessie didn't appear to be talking.
"Is something wrong?" Barker asked as he unloaded the picnic basket.
"Huh?" Julia mumbled, glancing to the food he had prepared.
"I'm sorry, Barker. I'm just a little distracted."
"Well, if you can give me your attention for 30 minutes, I'll let you get back to being distracted." Barker smirked so sweetly, The butterflies in Julia's stomach danced, unexpectedly, bringing her attention to the present. "Deal," Julia said, sighing and shuffling across the blanket so that she was sitting next to Barker and couldn't look at her cafe. "Did you make all of this?" "Ah," Barker said, smirking again. "Not quite. I was coming back from checking something out and passed a lovely-looking sandwich shop."
"And the blanket and basket?"
"Borrowed them from the station's lost and found," Barker whispered. "Don't tell anyone. You'd never believe half of the stuff people hand in."
"Your secret is safe with me," Julia whispered back,
her hair falling from behind her ear and over her face as she laughed gently.
Baker surprised her by reaching out and tucking the stray strand behind her ear. For a moment, the buzz of the village around them faded away as she looked into his eyes. She gulped, her throat suddenly dry. Laughing again, she turned her attention to the sandwiches as she felt her cheeks reddening.
"Bought or not, this all looks delicious," she said, her voice suddenly shaky. Barker unwrapped tuna and cucumber, cheese and pickle, and egg and cress sandwiches, and laid them out on their foil wrappers on the blanket. Julia opted for a tuna and cucumber sandwich, not realizing how hungry she was until she took her first bite. She had woken late that morning, and had had to rush through her Monday morning baking before opening the cafe, meaning she hadn't had time for her usual slice of toast and peppermint and licorice tea. Sitting under the early spring sun, with the hum of passing people and singing birds and buzzing insects, it was all so perfect. It made Julia forget about her cafe. When she finished her first half of her sandwich, she turned to Barker and shielded her eyes from the sun. "This is our third date in a week," Julia said. "Anyone would think you were trying to court me, Detective Inspector."
"Wouldn't that be quite the scandal?" Barker joked, leaning in and lowering his voice. "You know the village has been talking about us."
"Let them," Julia whispered back. "It just shows that things have gone back to normal after these last couple of months of madness."
"Things have certainly calmed down," Barker agreed, before taking a bite of his sandwich, leaving behind the crust. "I spent the morning investigating a stolen tractor up at Perrydale Farm. Yesterday, Amy Clark was convinced somebody had stolen her handbag, but she had just left it at Bingo."
"Does it make you miss the city?"
Barker tossed his sandwich crust onto the foil and turned to Julia, shielding his eyes from the sun as it found its midday position in the clear blue sky.
"Not a bit," he said, smiling from ear to ear. "Besides, there are things in this village I never had in the city."
"Like?" Julia asked, her cheeks reddening again.
"Oh, you know," Barker said, shrugging softly. "Certain people."
Julia laughed and dropped her head again. When she looked up, her eyes locked with two dark circles poking out from the sitting room window of her grand cottage.
"We're being watched," Julia said, nudging Barker with her shoulder.
Barker turned to look where Julia was pointing. Julia realized the two dark circles belonged to a pair of binoculars being clutched by her gran. With them both looking in her direction, the lacy net curtains suddenly dropped back into their original position. The front door opened seconds later, and Dot darted across the village green, her heavy binoculars bouncing under the brooch, securing her blouse in place under her chin.
"Your gran scares me,"
Barker mumbled out of the corner of his mouth as Dot ran towards them.
"I'll tell her you said that,"
Julia mumbled back. "I think that's her goal." Dot danced around a man walking his poodle, scowling down at the dog. When she finally made her way towards them, she slowed down and clutched her side, visibly out of breath.
"Afternoon, Gran," Julia called out. "Doing a spot of bird watching?"
"Nope," Dot said through her panting breaths. "Me and some of the girls have set up a neighbourhood watch group. You know, what with all these recent murders and all."
"Nice to know my job is valued," Barker whispered under his breath. "No offence, Detective Inspector," Dot said, hearing much better than most people would think for a woman her age. "But if it wasn't for my Julia, there would still be two killers running around on the loose. Any of us could be next." Julia held back her laughter. Her gran wasn't one to hold back or spare on the dramatics. Barker, on the other hand, was blushing and appeared lost for words. Julia knew her gran had just hit Barker where it hurt. "What happened to your book club, gran?" Julia asked, wanting to shift the conversation. "Well," Dot said, taking it as an invitation to join them on the picnic blanket, "some of the girls weren't too happy when we got to the mucky scenes in 50 Shades of Grey. They didn't realise how filthy that Mr. Grey was. I quite enjoyed it myself. Are those egg and cress?" Before either of them could respond, she reached out and plucked a sandwich from the mix. As she nibbled on the corner of the sandwich, Barker and Julia looked awkwardly at one another, neither appearing to know what to say. "Seen anything interesting with those things?" Barker asked, a slight shake in his voice. "The usual," Dot said. "I've been making notes. Hang on." Dot reached into her breast pocket and pulled out a small notepad, not unlike the one Julia made her own notes in. She wondered if her gran was trying to investigate her own case so she could steal a little of the glory the rest of the village showered on Julia. 8:15. Julia and Jessie arrive at the cafe. "Gran," Julia said. "You need protection," Dot cried. "After what you went through when you caught Charles Wellington's killer, you need a round-the-clock protection." Julia's fingers instinctively danced up to the fading scar on her forehead, which she'd learned to conceal with her hair. It had only been 2 weeks since she had had the stitches removed after being hit on the head with a recently boiled kettle while caught in the middle of her father's brother-in-law's murder investigation. Her sister, Sue, was adamant Julia should talk to a surgeon to try and remove the scar, but Julia thought it added character. "I'm fine, Gran," Julia said, trying to laugh. "Anything else?" 10:33. A red tractor speeds through the village. "A red tractor?" Barker jumped in. "Did you see who was driving it?" "Of course I did," Dot said, turning the page. "Billy Matthews." "I knew it," Barker said, snapping his fingers together. "That kid has been causing me trouble for weeks." "See?" Dot said, stabbing her finger down on the pad. "I told you this was useful." "And what use could you possibly have for spying on me and Barker eating lunch on the village green?" Julia asked, tilting her head quizzically at her gran. "Well, you know," Dot fumbled over her words, flicking through the pages. "See here. Julia and Barker are having a date on the village green. No axe murderers in sight." Julia and Barker both laughed. Julia was touched that her gran cared so much, although she was sure she was just spying to see how things were going. Dot had been trying to push their relationship along faster ever since Barker arrived in the village. "Well, I'm flattered, Gran," Julia said, "but I'm a big girl and I can look after myself. Thanks for the sandwich, Barker, but I'm going to have to get back to the cafe." "And me back to the station," he said, standing up and dusting the crumbs down his trousers. "I've got to visit the Fernmore estate, just out of the village. Billy Matthews' mother might like to know what her son has been up to." "That estate has caused nothing but trouble since they built it," Dot said as she peered through her binoculars at Roxy Carter, who was leaving the graveyard with her girlfriend, Violet Mason. "I protested to it being built in, what year was it, 82? Are these sandwiches going begging?" Barker held his hand out for Julia as Dot wrapped up the sandwiches and piled them under her arm.
Julia attempted to help her gran up off the blanket, but she brushed Julia's hand away and scrambled up to her feet on her own.
"Thanks for the sandwiches, Detective Inspector," Dot said as she turned and darted away. "Saved me a job for when the girls come around later to share notes."
They both watched as Dot walked back to her cottage. The moment she was back inside, she resumed her position at the window, with her binoculars pushed through her lacy net curtains and up against the glass. "Your gran is a character," Barker said, as he packed away the blanket and basket.
"One of these days we'll have an uninterrupted date."
"Oh, it's not so bad," Julia said, remembering their last date in a small country pub, which had been crashed by her sister and her husband. "If you add up all of these half-dates, we've almost had a full one somewhere along the way."
"Well, if you look at it like that," Barker said, as they started to walk towards Julia's cafe, "I guess we have."
Outside the cafe, Julia peered through the window, where Jessie was serving Roxy and Violet. Jessie seemed a little happier, but her sadness was still obvious. Remembering what she had promised, Julia turned to Barker and pulled her own notepad out of her dress pocket. She flicked to a page she had specifically made for Barker and tore it out.
"Can you look into these names?" Julia asked, tucking the piece of paper into his pocket.
"Three homeless men who frequented the Fenton Industrial Park have died recently, all without any real identifiable cause of death. Could you see if there's anything else out there that hasn't been passed on to the press? They were friends of Jessie's, and it would mean a lot to her."
"I'll see what I can find," Barker said, tapping the pocket.
"You're not investigating again, are you?"
"My days of investigating are behind me," Julia said, with a wink, as she turned around and pulled open her cafe door. "Besides, my gran's got that covered now. See you later, Detective Inspector."
Chapter 4. With even more donuts and coffee, Julia and Jessie returned to Fenton Industrial Park after sunset that night. The tension from their butting of heads in the cafe earlier had blown over, leaving behind only a slight undercurrent.
"This is far too kind of you," Tommy said, licking his lips after finishing his doughnut. "We've never been as well fed as these last 2 days. They're going to start hailing you as our Lord and Saviour soon enough. You watch."
After everyone was fed, and Julia's equipment was locked safely in her car, they headed over to Tommy's doorway, where the two upturned baskets were still positioned from the day before.
"Julia has talked to her detective boyfriend," Jessie said quickly, nibbling on the edges of her nails.
"He's going to look into it."
"Is that right?" Tommy murmured, a brow suspiciously arching.
"Well, not quite," Julia corrected Jessie, smiling awkwardly at Tommy. "I gave him the names, and I asked him to see if he could find something. Unofficially, that is."
"Sounds about right," Tommy said, shaking his head heavily. "The police don't care if we live or die."
Julia wanted to tell him that wasn't true, but she looked over her shoulder at the dozens of people crowding around various fires, wrapped up in their half a dozen layers of clothing each. Her doughnuts and coffee seemed to have brought smiles to some of the downturned faces, but it was like putting a single stitch over a bullet hole. There was a bigger issue at play here, and the police and the government weren't doing enough. Her heart ached, knowing this was where Jessie had been living before she took her into her home.
"I wanted to ask you if there's anything else you knew about the men who died," Jessie said, turning her attention back to Tommy as he clutched his plastic cup of coffee for warmth, his dirty nails poking out of his fingerless gloves.
"You said you found Bailey. I was just wondering if you noticed anything suspicious."
"Like I told you yesterday, my dear, I thought he was asleep, and then I realised he was dead. So we called for the ambulance and the police. That's all I know."
And the others? Jessie asked, edging forward on her basket. Who found them?
Mac found Father Thind, and Alcoholic Pete found Robert, Tommy said, tossing a finger in Pete's direction as he stumbled from group to group, a can of beer firmly in his hands. Although you won't get much from him. His mind is gone, thinks everything is a conspiracy and aliens are coming to take him away.
And Mac? Julia asked.
He's that young lad in the corner playing the guitar, Tommy said, tossing a finger across the car park. Talented kid. American.
Julia excused herself and left Jessie with Tommy. Stuffing her fingers into the pockets of her pale pink pea coat, she approached the man as he strummed away on his guitar to an invisible audience. Leaning over his instrument, his shaggy dark hair covered his face as he played, unaware of Julia's presence. She held back and listened for a moment as his fingers delicately danced over the strings, creating a soft melody that transported her out of the urban and stark surroundings. Tommy was right. The man was talented. How could somebody with such a gift be living in such as Fenton Industrial Park?
You play so beautifully, Julia said as she stepped forward. Do you mind if I take a seat?
The man looked up from under his messy hair, and his beauty caught Julia off guard. She'd been expecting somebody older and more rugged, but a soft, slightly tanned face stared up at her, his crystal blue eyes filled with as much melody as his music.
Not at all, Max said,
the thickness of his American accent taking her by surprise.
It's always nice to have a beautiful lady to play for.
Aware that she was blushing, Julia perched herself on the edge of the upturned crate in front of Mac. He continued his playing as he looked into her eyes. The music wrapped around Julia like a warm blanket. She almost forgot why she'd come to talk to the man in the first place.
How long have you played? Julia asked, hypnotized by the intricacy and speed of his fingers.
For as long as I can remember, Mac said, smiling to reveal his dazzling white teeth. It's the only thing keeping me sane.
You could play professionally, Julia offered, as Mac stopped playing and rested the guitar next to him, leaning his arm on top of the headstock.
I did, Mac said, his smile wavering a little, and his gaze not breaking away from Julia.
The music industry is a fickle place, lady. I came over with a promise of a deal, but things don't work out the way you plan.
What about home? Julia asked. America.
Minnesota, he said with a nod. There's as much for me there as here. My folks died when I was little, and I was an only child. As long as I have my guitar and people like you to appreciate my music, I'm a happy man. I have clothes on my back and people like you who are kind enough to keep putting donuts in my stomach.
Julia waited for his gaze to waver, but it didn't. She actually believed that he was happy. His life was simple and his needs were as basic as a person's got. But his smile was as genuine as a man with all of the money in the world.
Can I ask you something? Julia asked. Something a little sensitive.
Go ahead, lady, as long as it's something I want to answer.
It's about Robert Colshaw, Julia said, her lips trembling a little. The banker. Tommy told me you were the one who found him when he...
was murdered?
So you believe it was murder?
Of course I do, Max said, leaning back and looking suspiciously at Julia. All the folks in these parts do. The man was as clean as they come. The others, I could understand. But not Robert.
Clean? You know, Max said, nodding his head suggestively at Julia.
Alcohol and drugs. I'm not saying the others weren't clean. I don't know them all that well, but Robert was a healthy man. He wouldn't just die for no damn reason.
Mac ran his hands down his face, his smile dropping for the first time. It was obvious the death of his friend had hit him hard.
Is there anything you can tell me about the night you found him?
Julia asked, softly, not wanting to upset the young musician. Anything out of the ordinary that you noticed?
I was busking on the high street all afternoon. It was a Saturday, so people were generous with their tips. By the time the police moved me on, I had enough for a couple of drinks.